It is already Thursday in the octave of Easter, but the gospel once again takes us back to Easter Day, the events of Easter Day. The church recognizes that we can't get what happened on that Easter morning all at once. It takes time for us to absorb the extraordinary change that has taken place, not just the change that took place in Jesus' body, but the change that has taken place in the whole universe, in all of history. The resurrection changes everything. So we don't go to the tomb in today's gospel, but we go back to Easter evening and the kind of reunion of the two disciples who met Jesus on the road in yesterday's gospel. They have run back to Jerusalem, and before they could even tell them that they saw the Lord and recognized him in the breaking of the bread, they hear from the apostles that Jesus is alive and he has appeared to Simon Peter. So he appeared to Mary Magdalene, to the women that were with her. He appeared to Simon Peter. He appeared to the two disciples, Cleopas and the other one. So he's starting to make sure that people get it, that he's alive. But it's not that easy to get. Even those who see him don't necessarily recognize him. Mary Magdalene thought he was the gardener. The two disciples thought he was just a stranger who didn't know what was going on. He appears here to the disciples gathered together. This is the evening of Easter Day. And they're so startled and so terrified that they think they're seeing a ghost. Now, Mary Magdalene didn't think she was seeing a ghost. The two disciples didn't think they were seeing a ghost. Why do these people think they see a ghost? There's something so different going on here that our minds don't have categories to understand it. So what we do, and this is a normal psychological effect, we project, we see what we expect to see. When we're in a garden, we expect to see gardeners. When we're on the road, we expect to see people just walking down the road. But we don't expect to see people who died and just show up out of the blue. It doesn't say how Jesus appeared. It just says he stood in their midst as if he didn't even come through the door. He just popped into their view. What is that? If that happened to you, what would you think? Now, a ghost is a kind of a strange phenomenon. Maybe we shouldn't speculate about ghosts, but what we were told is that a zombie is a body without a soul, and a ghost is a soul without a body. That's not a scientific definition. But a ghost is a person who is, it's not just an animal or a plant or a rock, but a living person, but not in a normal condition, some kind of a mysterious condition. So that's what they conclude. Yeah, it must be a ghost. And he says to them, wait a minute. Why are you thinking all these crazy things? Look at my hands and my feet. A ghost doesn't have flesh and bones. He shows them who he really is. They still can't get it. So he says, give me something to eat. Got any food? Very, very practical. Ghosts don't eat food. Neither do zombies. Just normal people eat food. So he eats the fish. Now, what I want to emphasize here is that all these halting steps at recognizing the risen Lord are not because of any problem on Jesus' side, but because of the limitation on our side. Even though we know Jesus rose from the dead, And even though the disciples had been told many times he was going to rise from the dead, when it happens, it's too much to take in. Now, there are two things I'd like to point out that are emphasized in the scriptures yesterday and today. One of them is that Jesus' resurrection shows him as the fulfillment of all that was written. Remember when the two disciples were walking along the road, what Jesus told them was all the passages of scripture that referred to him. It's a way of getting us past this obstacle of being overwhelmed and not knowing how to understand the resurrection. He says, okay, this will help you. Go back to what was written. Go back to what was prophesied. Go back to Moses, the prophets, the Psalms, and that will help you understand who I am and what I'm doing. So that was yesterday. Again today, after he eats the fish and they're a little bit calmed down that he's really real, not a ghost, then he says, these are the words I spoke to you while I was still with you. Everything written about me in the law of Moses and in the prophets and the Psalms must be fulfilled. Meaning, now it is fulfilled because here I am. I love this next line. Then he opened their minds to understand the scriptures. He opened their minds to understand the scriptures. This is necessary, a necessary gift, grace, for us if we're going to understand the resurrection, the mystery of Easter. We need God to open our minds to understand the scriptures. If that gift is not given to us, we won't understand who this risen Lord is, and we'll come up with some earthly or purely human explanation. And this is what you see happening all the time. People trying to explain away the resurrection as if it was just a myth, or it was just a way of talking about Jesus' teaching remaining in the hearts of his believers, or whatever. Or someone stole the body, and the disciples said that he rose. Those are the explanations that come from people whose minds have not been opened to understand the scriptures. But the real grace here is to understand the scriptures. Now, when you see in the first reading, Peter talking to the crowd that is amazed at the cure of the crippled man, Peter also refers to the scriptures again and again. First of all, he says, This miracle didn't happen because of us. It happened because of Jesus, whom you killed and whom God raised from the dead. He doesn't mince any words. He puts the blame on them. He says, you denied the holy and righteous one, the author of life you put to death. You see how the preachers of the word are not afraid of offending people. You noticed that yesterday too, when Jesus was walking along, and at one point he said, how foolish you are and how slow you are to believe all that the prophets wrote. It's not a nice way of talking, but it's necessary. It's a part of the stages of helping people get over this boundary that is necessary, that prevents us from accepting the resurrection. We have to be able to get past our own foolishness, our own sin. Okay, so Peter is doing this. He explains what happens, and then he uses references to the scriptures to help them understand, including a long quotation from Moses, who said, a prophet like me will the Lord your God raise up for you. Well, Moses is talking about a prophet like him who God will raise up. He has raised him up. It's Jesus. And then Peter says, all the prophets who spoke from Samuel and those afterwards also announced these days. You see, so the point I'm trying to make is that if we want to welcome or accept the truth about Easter, about the resurrection, we have to accept what God already said about it in the scriptures. One thing this tells us is that even though it's difficult for us to understand, it's not difficult for God. He had this all worked out from the beginning. And he even spoke about it in many ways before it happened. So that helps us relax a little bit and say, well, even if I can't describe what a glorified body looks like or how Jesus came out of the tomb, God knows what he's doing. And he said he would do it, and now he's done it. Okay, so first, I said there are two things I want to emphasize. One is this fulfillment of the scriptures, this necessity of accepting the scriptures. The second thing that comes up yesterday and today is the strange truth that the Messiah had to suffer. This was in yesterday's reading, when the two disciples are walking along, Jesus says to them, was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and enter into his glory? So suffering, which to us is the contradiction, it seems to be the seems to go against what should happen. Jesus is saying, no, it had to happen like this. Again, in today's gospel, he tells the disciples, after he opens their minds to understand the scriptures, he says, thus it is written that the Christ would suffer. So don't be scandalized by the cross. This was already in the plan of God before it happened. The Christ would suffer and rise from the dead on the third day. Peter says the same in today's first reading. Where is it? Well, anyway, I can't remember. But it's part of the message of Easter that Jesus' passion and death was part of God's plan all along. His way of redeeming us is through his passion and death. Perhaps that's why he makes a point of pointing to his wounds. Touch me and see that a ghost does not have flesh and bones. He showed them his hands and his feet. Instead of just saying, look at my face, or, you know, touch my arm. Hands and feet. Why? Because the hands and the feet have the holes from the crucifixion, the wounds. Part of the mystery of the resurrection, here he is, a glorified, perfected body on the other side of death, and there are still signs of suffering. To show us something that we just cannot grasp, that suffering is not a contradiction to glory, that suffering is not an obstacle to the fulfillment of God's will. It's somehow, mysteriously, part of the whole process. Okay, so that's where we are in this fifth day of the octave. We're getting used to the idea that Jesus really rose from the dead, and we're starting to have our minds opened to what it really means. It doesn't mean that there won't be any more suffering. It doesn't mean that the war is over in Ukraine. It's not over. It doesn't mean that everything is going to work out now that Jesus rose from the dead. It means that even if we are suffering or in the midst of our suffering, there is a power at work to bring us through to glory on the other side of death. We don't have to be discouraged or afraid of anything because Jesus has risen victorious.